Hey there, oh there, you're listening to Super Tool Shed, the only podcast on the internet where internet nice guys not only finish last, they're killed immediately by the starter pistol. I'm Bennett the Sage, I'm joined by Mark the Engineer, and today's episode is a difficult dissertation on what it means to be a male nerd in today's society. From an essay on why a gamer girl stopped dating gamer guys, to a tragic story on a female cosplayer down in San Diego. It's about damn time we took a long, hard look at ourselves. But first, the pleasantries, Mark. How the hell have you been? It's been way too goddamn long since we last spoke on Toolshed.
We've been busy. I want to clarify this really, really quickly. It's not that Super Toolshed hasn't been happening. It's that we haven't been recording it.
Essentially. What it boils down to, because both of us are working extra, extra hard. Well, I'll be fair. You are working way, way harder than I am on a project that's been in the works for, 8 months now?
Since December. And we still can't talk about it, and that sucks.
I know. It's... God damn it.
But it's exciting.
It's exciting, but, like, you always kind of have to hold your breath when, like, the first news of it is actually leaked out, and then you're kind of obligated to follow through. I mean, like, right now we could just, like, throw our hands in the air if it doesn't work out. It's like, you know what, 8 months down the drain, but so what? But if we actually get to, like, the first bit of news, then all of a sudden it's just like, God damn it.
Like, that's
we have to make this work.
Like, we put the gas on in the engine, now we gotta go.
And we're heading right towards a cliff, and the steering's locked.
Yeah. So we've been kind of just like, because what happened was, like, you went on vacation, and that just immediately went, like, for the first time ever, it's like, hey, I'm going on vacation, and it's not a fake out intro for Violence Check. It really was that Bennett went on vacation. So for 2 weeks, I was just kind of sitting around like, well, then I guess I'll just work on my own shit then. And in the meantime, like, I had to launch Linkara's website and work out all the bugs after the launch and do all these new features that he wanted. And the launch went well. And thank you to everybody that kind of, you know, went and gave feedback and said how nice the site looked. I really appreciated that. And then we just kind of got back into it, but it's like, well, we're sort of in the middle of the month and we have nothing, we have no scripts. We don't have an entire month's worth of material, and I really don't think that either one of us wanted to get back to that terrible fucking place where it's like, all right, so the script is done on the 4th, we film it on the 5th, and it's out by the 14th, you know?
We wanted to get to that point where all the month's scripts are written before the month we have to shoot it. And it didn't happen this month, but that's only because of the difficulty of the upcoming reviews that's coming down on the pipeline. And September is going to be especially difficult because not only do I have to get those reviews written, but I also have to get, I believe, the 21st episode of September done early because I will be out of town at Mythicon during that time. You know, just another plug, just in case somebody missed it.
Yeah, our last two cons of the year, you're doing Mythicon, and I'm doing PsychoCon, which is in Allentown, and that's at the end of this month. And there's not really any cons in Pennsylvania, except for PsychoCon and...
Was it a KetsunaCon?
ZenkaiCon.
ZenkaiCon.
And I feel bad for momentarily forgetting their name, but all these names just kind of, like, merged together. However, I will never forget ZenkaiCon staff, because they were all fucking awesome. I love you, Maddie.
Shout outs to your peeps at ZenkaiCon.
Yeah, like, my handlers were, like, I really didn't get to talk about ZenkaiCon at all. Like, it was a really great time, and I got to be on a panel with Jim Cummings, which was fucking amazing, and Brina Palencia, who was super duper nice, and we did script readings and we did the Q&A, and they have a fantastic venue out there in Amish country. So yeah, it was a great time, and the staff was really super awesome. And my handler, he was really great, just because he found me the first day, and I just kind of told him, look, I know that your job description is supposed to be make Mark happy, but I'm relieving you of duty. I don't need anything. I drove here. I just need my per diem. And I need money for food when food happens to be a problem. And beyond that, you can go and enjoy the con. I don't care.
It's the fact that ZenkaiCon treated you with probably the exact same, if not the exact same respect as they probably treated Jim Cummings, That speaks a lot about Zenkai Con, I think. Or how little they give a shit about Jim Cummings.
No, because Jim was pretty laid back, too. Like, he just kind of rolls around the con wearing random Disney shirts and shaking hands. And as he was leaving, despite the fact that I didn't exchange any more than a hello with him, he actually made it a point to say it was very good working with you. And he shook my hand and wished me well. And that was cool.
Like, yeah, did the voice of Winnie the Pooh ever shake your hand to tell you it was great working with you? No? Shut the fuck up. Go to bed.
And then there was Anime Next, and Anime Next is the home. It's pretty much the home field advantage, and I love everybody there. And I had a great time with the Epcars, who were super great.
I know Richard Epcar, but who are the other Epcars?
Well, it's just the two. It's Richard and Ellen, his wife.
Oh, okay.
And it was actually kind of interesting, because what happened when I got there was, like, I've been there forever, so it's just kind of like I'm not really a guest. I'm just a piece of furniture at this point. And the guy who was running GR this year, guest relations, when I got there on Thursday, he was just kind of looking frazzled, and I said, "Well, what's going on?" He said, "Well, the Epcars got rerouted through Kansas, so they're going to be at LaGuardia and not Newark." And I went, "Oh. How is that a problem? All of my drivers are either asleep or out getting other people." Oh. All right, give me keys. So I drive to LaGuardia from Somerset to get Richard and Ellen. And I've met Richard before, but very briefly. And we're associates through Brett Weaver.
The thing about Brett Weaver I've learned very, very soon after I met him was that everyone in the VA industry kind of knows Brett Weaver, and yet Brett has like such a minimal impact in the voice acting industry.
Yeah, he's there, but he's not there. He's like the dark side, or he's like the force. He has a light side and a dark side, and he binds the whole voice acting universe together. so he's also like duct tape. But
go ahead. This was actually a really cool story.
So we get back, and my friend Pete, who is helping us write bits of this project that we're working on, he gets there, and we usually go to a diner that's just a little bit down the road. And Richard pretty much thought that he was going to be stuck in for the night and stuck eating mini bar snacks. And I said, "Well, me and my friend Pete are going to go to a diner if you want to join us." So he actually decided to come along. And that was a great dinner, and that was a great time, and we talked about stuff like solar roadways and just kind of like environmentalist stuff and just like cool, you know, little things that makes Richard's gears turn. And the next day I had the VO workshop with Bill and Greg, and I'm sitting in the green room, and Richard comes out to the patio where I'm smoking, and he says, "Oh, hey, Mark, how you doing?" And I'm like, "Oh, I'm doing fine." And immediately he goes, "You wouldn't be able to drive me and Ellen somewhere." And because I know that they kind of like to do the touristy thing when they're going to places that they haven't been or don't get to frequent very often. And I was like, I can't. I've got a panel in like 10 minutes. And we end up just like shooting the shit after that. And then he goes, "So about that ride?" I was like, "Oh, right. Shit. All right, here's my keys. Go with God." Give him my keys, my owner's card, my insurance card. And I was like, "Just please don't crash my car." And then I run to my panel where we had Jonathan Klein out for Anime Next, which is really cool. And he was like, "Where were you?" I was like, "I just gave Richard Epcar the keys to my car. Should I be worried?" It's like, "I don't know. I've never seen him drive." It's like, "Oh, good." And I'm just like trying to rationalize it in my head. Like, well, Hasselhoff was tall.
For those of you who don't know, Richard Epcar is what, 7.5 feet tall?
No, that's an exaggeration. He's like 6'8".
Yeah, he's a big giant man, and Mark drives a tiny American-made muscle car.
Which, it's not a secret, I drive a Firebird. So that's why I was just like trying to rationalize it in my head, like, Richard's gonna be okay. He's gonna be okay. Hasselhoff is really tall. But I didn't get to see him drive it, though.
You don't know if he had to clown car it with his knees up to his ears as he's just kind of barely shifting the wheel.
Well, here's the thing. When I got out of the panel, I came back to the green room, and right outside of the green room is the parking lot, and my car was there. And I go, "Okay, well, Richard's back." And I just had to check. So I open the door, sit down. My seat is still in the same place. My wheel is still in the same place. My mirror is still in the same place. And I go, he didn't change a fucking thing. And either he is the most respectful driver that I've ever come across, because normally, you know, somebody gets in your car, they change your seat, they change your radio.
I wouldn't change the radio. I might have to change the seat and change the mirror, but that's just for, like, safety reasons.
And the only thing that changed was that the air conditioning was on. And I only found out later was because neither he nor his wife could figure out where the windows where the window controls were in my car. Because they're not on the doors. They're in the center console because a Firebird is trimmed to be like the cockpit of an airplane.
Way to go, 1980s automotive industry.
Hey, man, I think it's cool. I feel cool whenever I get into my car.
Oh, I'm glad somebody does. Because the brief few moments I was in your car, I felt like I was inside a 1985 hooker. It just felt dirty.
Like for the record, I hadn't fixed the air conditioning yet. I drove from Philly to Maryland at night. It was raining. I had the windows down. It was humid in the car, and I haven't replaced the carpet yet. It doesn't smell amazing.
Why do you keep selling this so short? It was a thoroughly unpleasant car to be in at the time. I'll grant you, I haven't been in it lately, so I don't know what it feels like now, but at the time, it was, you just could not get out of that car fast.
Well, you're also overly fucking sensitive, you know, e.g. a pussy. So, you and your fucking element. So, wah. But I'm still retrimming the car, you know, like the interior is the last thing on my mind. Like I can go down the list of, I bought the car 2 years ago for $1,000, and I can go down the list of everything that I've replaced since then. I've replaced all 6 injectors, the drive shaft, which you gave me for my birthday, the fuel pressure regulator, the ignition cables, the spark plugs, the distributor cap, what else? I've replaced all of the hoses. I've replaced the oil drain plug. I've replaced the brake cables in the back. I replaced the wheel cylinders for the brake cables, the brake shoes, all the brake hardware, bleeders for the calipers in the front, new pads, new bearings, a new nose, a new hood, new fenders, new antenna, new doors.
It's practically a different car, I'll grant you.
Yeah.
And I'll inform all you viewers out there, or listeners rather, what my new Firebird Molly experience is like.
Yeah, we'll film it.
You know, Marsha's grilling really face close to me with the camera, and I'm sitting in, and it's like, it's a car. And that's when the party balloons are released and streamers and a marching band walks by.
Yeah, because it'll be exactly like when you were sitting there fucking staring me down over your goddamn pizza. Because we told that story, but just to remind, Bennett was staring a hole in my fucking dome. Like, so how's the pizza, Mark? How's the pizza? And just for the record, I mean, it's not bad pizza, but it reminds me of Chuck E. Cheese's pizza, which is hit or miss for most people. And it's good pizza. It's not great pizza. It's not New York pizza. It's not New York style pizza, but it reminds me of Chuck E. Cheese's pizza, which is really hit or miss for some people. And it's a high quality Chuck E. Cheese pizza. Like, it's almost like when you go into Chuck E. Cheese, everybody there gives a shit about how the pizza tastes, despite the fact that the kids don't. So
like that one Chuck E. Cheese out of 15.
Yeah, where you can go there and consistently the pizza tastes good every single time, even though you know it's definitely not the best pizza you've ever had. So that's what it'll be like. I'm just going to stare you right the fuck down and be like, so how's the car? I'm going to turn the air conditioning on. I've got new carpets, Bennett. I put dynamat under the carpet so it insulates the car from sound and heat. I spent $200 on fucking dynamat to dynamat the whole car.
Why don't you just say dynamat some more?
Dynamat, dynamat, dynamat. Shit's expensive too.
I bet I helped pay for that.
No, you haven't. You have not. Dynamat is the last thing that I'm worried about with the car in terms of restoration, because it means that I've got to take out all the seats. I've got to take everything out of the car right down to the center console, And then I need to weld any holes that might be in the floor pans. And once I do that and I'm satisfied with like, okay, well, the floor pans are good, because here's the thing, like your car has, your car's floor has what's called floor pans, which is really just the floor, but they're welded into the car. So if they go bad, rust through, then you have to have them cut out of the car. My floor pans cost $250 a piece minus whatever, like plus whatever it will cost to have them cut out and welded in. So I really don't want to spend money on soundproofing and insulating the car if 5 years down the road I have to cut it all out. So I need to evaluate the state of the floor, but my car just passed inspection, so there's no holes in the floor. You fail for holes in the floor in Pennsylvania.
And that's not just like, I think that's the tip of the iceberg of how you can fail a Pennsylvania inspection, if I am to understand the situation correctly.
Oh yeah, if you want to see exactly how much Pennsylvania hates motorists who have old cars, go ahead and look up the PennDOT inspection failure criteria, because the safety inspection, first off, it's really hard to find a trustworthy station, because the ways that you can fail an inspection are so goddamn gray that they could, like, if you just get a tech that's having a bad day, he could fail you for something as stupid as there's a bolt missing from your front bumper, because it just says your front bumper cover must be properly attached. Well, properly attached is really vague language. So I've got 15 bolts in my bumper. I'm missing two. A tech can fail me for that and then charge me for two bolts.
That'll be $200.
I mean, I've run into inspection stations where they're really cool about certain stuff. Like if they know that you can't get replacement parts. The first Firebird I had when I was 17, the high brake didn't work at all. Like there was some breakage in the wire. The wires are rotten or something. So they just took it out. They just asked me, like, do you mind if we take this out? And it said it can't be fixed. It's like, no, and you can't get a replacement. GM doesn't make it anymore. And even if we could get a replacement, it would take a week and it would cost you way more money than it would for us to just take it out and cut the wires. We can't fail you for something that's not there.
Bad. That's sound reasoning.
It is. You know, so some inspection stations are really cool about that sort of thing. So, yeah.
But I think it's we've danced around the issue a little bit long enough, actually. Let's get down to the uncomfortable topic of today's podcast. We've basically talked about this in one form or another pretty much all throughout Super Tool Shed's run about nerddom and its propensity of crossing the line as far as social interaction is concerned. And this is straight hard into Assholeville, these few stories that have happened rather recently. And I think the first story we need to talk about is actually an article that Mark came across about a gamer girl who basically wrote an online blog talking about why dating gamer guys is a bad thing. And I read the article.
For the record, I mean, technically in a roundabout way, she's a part of the overall new media family. So watch Nicaea summaries for Pretty Guardian Sailor Moon. But yeah, because I follow her on Twitter, and she's always pretty funny and interesting to follow. So we'll link the article so that way you can read it yourself at her Twitter, just for fair dues. But I kind of sat down and read this article, and I read it twice and just kind of went, huh, that's worth talking about.
I think my only real problem with the article is that I think she's kind of confusing male gamers with losers, because I think loserdom crosses all social boundaries. I mean, you could be a loser and never held a Super Nintendo controller in your life. But I think the article does bring up some kind of good points about, well, this, what nerddom has been socially stigmatized to be, this social shut-in, doesn't go out very often, your entire life revolves around their sole passion, and they don't really do anything with themselves or with their life. And that's what this whole, when you boil down the article, when you distill the article, that's what it was about. That the reason why she doesn't want to date gamer guys anymore, or at least that for the time is because they don't really do anything other than just their games and then talk about what they're going to do. And then they don't do it. And then they continue to talk about games and lead a pretty shallow life. I mean, that's bad no matter how you slice it.
So let's jump in.
Yeah. So let's talk about people who don't do anything with their lives. And I'll be completely transparent on this. I felt like that at some point or another. I mean, how can you not? Especially when you work from home. You don't have a lot of openings to go out and mingle and talk with people. It's, you know, when you're just stuck at home and you're typing up scripts or you're looking at anime, writing down notes, you're not interacting with anybody else. And you could make the argument that I interact with people online, but that's not exactly the same thing. That's not the same thing.
Well,
and that's,
let's break this down a little bit, because mm-hmm. I don't want this to turn into bronies versus phonies, but I do want to, at the very least, frame some of the paragraphs. So we'll start at the top with why dating guy gamers turned out to be a bad idea. Sure, it seems fun at first, mostly because it's comfortable. Every night it's like a pajama sleepover that ends in sex. That's the American dream. That's before spending every night in playing League of Legends or Assassin's Creed gets really, really boring. I dated a lot of men who considered themselves gamers. Why? Low self-esteem, mostly. I knew a lot about games and enjoyed playing them. And that interest was a hook, something that men could relate to and feel comfortable talking about. I didn't feel like my personality and looks alone was enough to generate any real interest, and as a teen, I was probably right. My focus was being good enough for them, with no question as to whether or not they were good enough for me. Now, obviously, this is all based on my personal experience and my friends. There are always exceptions. However, if you feel you're the exception to any of this, just feel content in that. I don't need to hear about it, and honestly, if you can't control your impulse and convince me that you're the special special, I love that you're the special special, then you're probably exactly the type of guy I'm talking about. Consider this constructive criticism from the opposite sex. So here are a few observations about dating guy gamers. And the first one is the lack of real world motivation, which is what really kind of like drew me into this, because of exactly what Bennett was just saying. I found that most of the gamers I dated did little else but game exclusively. They were not well-rounded people with different interests: cooking, sports, politics, unless about gaming, art, fashion, music, unless it's video game remixes, travel are not as interesting to them as the latest DLC on Steam. Most of the men I dated never went to college for anything unless they attempted to do something in games. But all attempts fail, inevitably. Everything is too hard, too complicated, they work too much or sleep too little. Excuses abound. This becomes a problem when you want to go out and do real-world things. Take a walk, go dancing, go to the library, go to the beach. It's all just too much of an effort for a gamer boyfriend. I hope you have a really tight-knit circle of friends, because you'll be seeing them a lot while your boyfriend is home raiding. So, all by itself, this first paragraph lets you know that, like, oh man, this is a war story. This is a fucking war journal. Because I know those guys. I absolutely have known those guys. And this really does feed backwards into everything that we've ever said about, you know, the type of people that we're surrounded by, how we kind of have the good fans, the bad fans, how fandom inevitably ruins all property, how it just becomes the beginning and the end of your entire fucking reality, and nothing else goddamn matters, and you become this really worthless human being because I can't talk to you about anything else. You know, we had the whole argument about the sexualization of Samus with Kerberfer here, and there were people who were making comments about how how he was just kind of rude and bleh, and you know, like that's really neither here nor there. But my, you know, me getting angry at him was primarily because his whole experience came from his singular experience through Metroid, and he had no corollary information that fed that overall opinion. Like, he doesn't know about Alien, he doesn't know about Ridley Scott, he doesn't know about where Metroid comes from, and that's something that you can kind of copy and paste from person to person, where all they care about is what they care about and nothing fucking else. Like, I'm sitting here talking to you, like, I'm sitting here a nerd talking to you about cars, but I can talk to you about art, and I can talk to you about comics, and I can talk to you about some current events as I find them interesting, you know, articles about youth rebellion, things like that.
And talking with me, it just feels like you're talking to the human Wikipedia, as you more than once said to me.
Yeah, like, it's about, you know, like, you can be a nerd. You can be a nerd, a gamer, a comic book guy, a fucking brony. You can be whatever the fuck you want. But the thing is that you still... It is still up to you and your personal responsibility to be an interesting fucking person.
Because, you know, if you call yourself a gamer, that's all you're going to be. If that's what you want, then that's fine. If all you want to be is a gamer, then go ahead, live your life. You're probably not going to do anyone any real world harm. But I can't imagine that's a life well lived in the long run.
Like, you can self-identify for the sake of making things easier because everybody loves little boxes.
Everyone likes to be categorically judged.
Yeah. So, like, I still, like, even despite this article, I will still absolutely wholeheartedly puff my chest out and say, like, I'm a gamer, and I have been since I was 6 years old. First game was Sonic the Hedgehog on the Sega Genesis. You know, like, I'll hold that, you know, up with pride. I'm not going to, like, fucking hide it, because the time of hiding it is over. And maybe that's part of the problem?
Maybe. A little bit. Like, I think that when... you're a gamer back in the early mid 90s, you kind of had to approach gaming. People approached gaming as if it was a niche activity, and you were kind of castigated for it. And that meant that even though you love what you love, you couldn't lead with your best foot forward in that regard. So you had to come up with something else.
And it's the same thing with comics and anime and Pogs. You know?
No. That, you do not compare Pogs to that. Pogs was never stigmatized.
Pogs, until Magic, whatever.
Magic was stigmatized. Pogs wasn't stigmatized until, like, after 1999. And that was when bullies went, like, you still playing with Pogs, faggot? Punch. That was about it.
But, you know, like again, like, you can really copy and paste it that, like people don't necessarily have to suffer for who they are anymore, because we live in such a non-confrontational society where you can get in trouble for goddamn anything. So, of course, you know, everybody's just kind of being forced to live and let live. And the problem is that when everybody's afraid of everybody, no one is brazen enough to use a little bit of candor and call somebody on their shit, which is part of the reason why I like this article. You know, like the very next thing is, you know, they don't take care of themselves in this article, talking about general gamer hygiene. And there is no leg to stand on the gamer side of that, because I was at MAGFest 9.
Yeah.
I don't know what MAGFest smells like these days. I mean, the Gaylord is a huge fucking place, but I was at MAGFest 9. I came in on Thursday. People couldn't have been there for any longer than from Wednesday night into Thursday day into night, and it smelled like fucking refried death. Like, I would have rather been trapped in a box with 20 scared skunks than than deal with the smell of MAGFest 9 ever fucking again. That morning, that Friday morning, I was up at the ass crack of dawn, come downstairs to go fucking catch a smoke. And of course, the fucking elevator situation at MAGFest 9, which everybody who was there very clearly remembers. So I took the stairs. And the stairs smelled very distinctly of industrial strength Lysol, not some off-brand disinfectant that you get at a dollar store bulk cost. Lysol. So they were serious. Like, I don't even think they had that much Lysol in the joint. They probably sent somebody out.
Oh man, all the Mexican maids had to go back to their home to get their own personal Fabuloso to spray all across the hotel.
Like, seriously, there was a cloud of disinfectant in the stairwell. It didn't go anywhere because there's no ventilation in the stairwell. It was there all day. You could not breathe in there. I'm fairly certain that if I tried to light my cigarette in the stairwell, the whole place would have went up.
I got lucky because my room just happened to be near facing the atrium, and everyone else, you know, paid for all of the block hotel rooms, and those were in the east and west wings, but nobody was in like the centralized location. So I just kind of got into like, yay, sweet smelling air. It doesn't smell like a Cheeto fart.
Really? Because it really was that corn chip smell.
I've met those people. I was those people, actually. I went through this period where I just kind of went through my head like, why should I shower? I don't mind how I smell, and I don't see anyone else in the day.
Which, all by itself, that makes you a sad fucking human being. I'll tell you.
Yeah.
At no point ever have I not taken my personal hygiene or appearance seriously. And the reason why is because my grandfather used to own a barbershop, and he had a placard right above his chair. And I would look at it every day, and it said, "Your appearance is your calling card." And, you know, like when you're a kid, it doesn't really seem to make sense. But as you're, you know, trying to attract people to you, make friends, find a significant other, and generally do business in your day-to-day life, suddenly your appearance is your calling card makes all the sense in the world. It's really just another way of saying that presentation is everything. And it's not just the way you look. You know, so, like, it can be something as simple as not buying cheap-ass cologne from some guy who sold it to you at a gas station, for instance.
I mean, even when you get frapp a turd before you open it, it still looks pretty.
So for me personally, it's not like I'm a vain person and I'm like, oh, like I need to wear expensive clothes. Like, I don't. I'm wearing fucking pants that I bought for $9 at Foreman Mills. I'm wearing a Black Lantern shirt right now, and I just got a new pair of sneakers again from Foreman Mills. So I'm like, I don't dress expensively. I just dress what I personally consider to be nicely. And depending on the situation, you know, like I'll have, you know, a pressed shirt if it's, you know, like a real business function. But generally speaking, you know, like I don't walk out of the house looking and smelling haggard. And MAGFest 9, I mean, it really was just the event that let you know, like that these types of people are real. That the guy who, you know, like doesn't test fucking deodorants over time to figure out which one works best for him. He's like, well, I've been using Right Guard since I was 8. You know, it's like, oh, God.
I mean, I try to do the whole deodorant test, and I have yet to find one that works for me. I feel so awful about it. I really do. I went through like 4 or 5 different brands, and I sweat through them every time I'm working out. And I get like by hour 2, I might as well have just wiped my armpits with a baby diaper.
Working out is different. Working out is entirely excusable just because you're you know, sweating profusely. It doesn't really fucking matter. But, like, that general, you know, like, if you're just going around a con, for instance, you know, like, I understand, you know, it's 5, 7, 20 people to a fucking room, but you make a fucking chart. You make a chart and you chart out showers, and your shower can be no longer than 10 minutes. You know, like, that's whatever.
Save some hot water for the rest of us, asshole.
You know, like, it's not even about hot water. It's just about, you know, like, look, if you're in a room where the windows don't open and the door is fairly soundproof, just assume that air isn't really circulating through that room and you're just breathing each other. And that all by itself should, like, that hot stickiness should just make you realize, like, okay, I need a fucking shower. And I don't really know what the rooming situation was at MAGFest 9. I would assume that it wouldn't have been any different from any other convention. And, you know, like, I'm not disparaging MAGFest 9. I'm disparaging the people who didn't fucking shower at MAGFest 9. Because, personally, I really liked MAGFest 9. I filmed Curb Stomp there. It was a fun time. And I went back the following year.
And I didn't, for good reason.
but
that's neither here nor there.
But, yeah, like, it's just about, you know, just because you're a gamer, just because you like to sit there and raid for 5 to 10 hours or whatever, doesn't mean that you can't fucking get up and just do the armpit test. Or, you know, maybe if you haven't showered since yesterday, just take a quick fucking shower. You know, just be boot camp about it. Shit, shower and shave in 10 minutes. That's all you got.
We're talking about gamers here. They can't shit, shower, and shave in 10 minutes.
No, not on a steady diet of fucking Doritos and Mountain Dew.
God. If he he'd be lucky if he could shit in 10 minutes. I mean, seriously, if you're standing outside the door with somebody with that kind of diet, it sounds like he's trying to put, like, change down the porcelain toilet. It's just this clunk, 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 clunk. Followed by this, dude, maybe you shouldn't have eaten those two bags of Doritos. And he's sitting on the toilet, still eating Doritos. What?
And it all just drags back to the point that it's, you know, like that this really is kind of a war journal, which is why that I found it so interesting, why I forwarded it to Bennett, it's why I retweeted it, it's why we're going to post it on the website after we're done here. The next thing that's is they don't take interest in real world issues, which we already kind of covered that. But generally speaking, you know, like the world, like just to, you know, say something about it. Yes, the world is bigger than your fucking basement and more goes on than what you see in your Facebook feed. Maybe you should take an interest. Now, here's what really kind of made me go, oh, shit, this might be me. They all say they want to make write animate games, but never do. God, this. What does a person who takes no interest in anything except games plan on doing with their lives? Why, making games, of course. Except the reality is game development is fucking hard, expensive, and lacking a lot of the glamour they think it will bring them. Unless he's in the actually programming and development phase of the game by the time you've met him, he's probably just a dreamer. The older you both are, the more true that statement rings. Don't get pulled into his fantasy about how he's going to eventually hit the big time. Odds are he probably won't make it past drawing the concept art. This is what kind of made me stop in my tracks and go, shit. Well, we're not making a game.
So that doesn't mean us.
But it applies.
Well, it's kind of hard to talk about this on Toolshed, especially since we went to great lengths to not specify what we're doing at the beginning of this episode.
But the point is that we have a project, and it's a fairly large scale project that would normally require a team, and it's just me and you right now. It's really just me, you, and David. and the thing is that with, like, we're like, I'm sitting on concept art, and I'm, you know, and I'm doing the work, and I'm just sitting there reading this, going like, this isn't me. But the thing is that it's not me.
No, it's not, because. We have strayed far beyond the realms of, like, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we made this? Yeah, we should do it.
Yeah, we've gotten
5 months.
Yeah, like, we've gotten past the coffee table talk. We've gotten past the hypothetical. Like, we are now in the tangible. Like, we have actual production assets. So we're not here. We're not in this. You know, in this very common sphere of, like, man, it would be so cool if I could make a game like No More Heroes or like Devil May Cry, but better, because the fucking Ninja Theory version of Devil May Cry sucked and they betrayed me. But it is really interesting because it is really prevalent. You know, like, how many times on our Twitter feed is it, would you please retweet my Kickstarter for this game that I'm working on? You know, like every other day. And in Linkara's case, it's every day.
The guy means well, but at this, I have to wonder, like, how many people on his Twitter feed have actually contributed to the Kickstarter funds that he has tweeted?
Which, granted, you know, like, his meaning well, like, I asked him, I was like, why do you retweet everything? And he says, like, it's a button. I can't get personally invested in every single thing that comes across my feed, but that doesn't mean that I can't care enough to press a button. And you know what? He's right. You know, like, it's not affecting his personal brand to just hit a button and be like, look, I'm not necessarily supporting this, but I'll signal boost for it because I have a high audience penetration. it does, you know, like there is that general, like on a person-to-person basis, someone will say, you know, like, oh, well, Lewis retweets everything, so nothing is worth shit. But there are the people who genuinely value any, like, anything that he has to kind of retweet and signal boost for. So, and that's going to be the majority of his audience. So he's not really doing any harm by doing that sort of thing. But there have been tons of articles lately on Kickstarter or on, like, about Kickstarter, about how, you know, like how hard it is to deal with Kickstarter and the promises that you make and legal liability and how people aren't planning their goals appropriately and how, since, you know, the it's a revolving door sort service at this point, you know, and not that many people walk out with the cash they need to finish these projects. Like it's less like a town hall meeting and more like a casino.
Yeah, it's every project that has been started through Kickstarter, well, that had Kickstarter funding and has yet to come to completion. And I'm looking at you, Smosh, with your stupid fucking mobile app game that required $250,000. Fuck you. You know, it's because of assholes like you that anything, like any worthy project that could have been started through Kickstarter doesn't get the money or doesn't get off the ground.
And it, like, and it breeds skepticism. And, like, it, like, there's nothing wrong with a world full of dreamers. You know, dreamers built the society that we have. Dreamers say, you know, why can't phones be smarter? Or why can't cars be safer? Why can't computers be better? So there's nothing wrong with the dreamers. It's just the fact that, you know, like, it takes a lot more than a dream. And unfortunately, this actually feeds into something else that's in the article, which I'm not going to read the entirety of, because I actually do kind of want you to sit down and enjoy, like, and read the article in a vacuum and see how it makes you feel. But there's a part of this article that talks about how gamer guys are programmed to feel heroic. How overall, you know, like they're meant, like they're pretty much all gamer guys are programmed to be fucking Titus. You know, just running around and fucking like, this is my story.
Well, the thing with Titus is that it eventually did become his story. It became his sacrifice. It became his ultimate destiny to free Spira from sin.
But most gamer guys aren't progressing that far. They get as far as the annoying part of running around screaming, this is my story and I'm the hero and it's about me. And it's that kind of programming that makes that makes them think that they can do fucking anything, that they're bulletproof and invincible. And then, of course, you know, they've lived a fucking cream puff life, and as soon as shit gets hard, shit just stops. Like, every time shit gets a little bit too hard, it's like, oh, well, I guess I'll scale down my dreams, but I'll talk about them like they're still big. Like there really is nothing wrong with being a dreamer, but you gotta, you know, like, there needs to be, like, a handbook, a pep talk, something that lets you know that, like, shit's fucking hard. You know, everything that I've been doing since December for this project and everything that I'm going to continue to do onward has taken up my time. It has cost me sleep. I'm sure that at some point it's going to cost me some shred of my health. Although I guess I'm personally I'm lucky just because of the fact that since I work freelance, like, I don't have to juggle a proper job and trying to start a project. And a lot of these guys are trying to improve their lots in life while still maintaining life as normal, you know, living this double life where they're fucking Bruce Wayne by day and Batman by night. But generally speaking, I mean, I wouldn't call it like the pyramid scheme of gaming, but it kind of is, where they, you know, gaming raises you, they raise you to believe in heroes, they raise you to believe in the impossible, that miracles can fucking happen, you know, they show you success stories, like look at fucking Reggie Fils-Aimé, you know, he just started as a fucking hype man for Nintendo, and now he's the president of Nintendo America.
That title may not carry as much weight as it once was.
well, no, but still, I mean, like, I remember watching, like, old school G4 footage, and he was just sitting there, like, he was sitting in a parking lot getting interviewed with, you know, like, not looking anything like he does now. And, like, they can tell you these, you know, these dreamy success stories. Like you look at, you know, him or like the prodigies, like, or the semi-prodigy story of Blazinski or the guy who came up with Splinter Cell, how he was a fucking receptionist.
And these are all inspiring stories. But I think one of the points of the article that I think I need to address, at least, is that everyone thinks they're the hero of their own lives, in some form or another. It's what makes them think that they're always in the right whenever any kind of start of the argument. It's, I mean, how could anyone not think of the, like, who the hell thinks they're the villain of their own stories? Or at least a side, you know, at least somebody off to the side of their own stories. But I think what she's trying to think of is that they think they're the Brad Pitt of their stories, that everything around them happens to them. They don't have to really interact at all. They don't even really need to be approachable. They just need to have the world around them conducive to them.
Yeah. And it, like, and it doesn't make for shitty people, but it makes for a lot of shitty, you know, situations where, like, it's because it's classic, because it's not just gamers. It's the actor who lives with his girlfriend while he's auditioning, for instance. It's the guy who needs some startup money from a bunch of his friends or his girlfriend to start the big business and hit it big. So it's not something that's localized to the gaming sphere. Like it's a really old story at this point, you know, like everybody's trying to strike out and make their fortune. And some people can't do it alone. I mean, most of us can't do it alone, but some people find that they have this kind of symbiotic relationship with their significant other where it's like, oh babe, I'm really hungry, could you like get me some food? It's like, why don't you get a fucking job? And it's like, I can't get a job because like the man would hold me down from my music, you know, like the, well, then the man would cut all of my strings.
No man, like the man would retie the strings that I cut. And then they'll try to make me be a little puppet and dance for them because that's their sexual fetish and everything. And you don't want me to do that, right? I thought you loved me! I thought you loved me!
Like, I thought you loved me, babe. I didn't know you wanted me to be just some Clive Barker caricature.
But I understand, like, listen, I can't be too harsh on these people that do that because, for the most part, I am that kind of guy. I'm the guy who, you know, tried to strike it out and build his own brand on his online presence and try to make a living that way. And for the most part, it has kind of worked. I mean, I'm not completely, totally 100% self-sufficient, but I am getting by. And that is way, way, way more than other people get in my exact same position. And don't think I don't go through my life without realizing that. But, and so I can't get really too hard on these people that try to do what they want to do, you know, do what they love and focusing squarely on that. But I think I like this article. I like this article because of how it ends and realizing that she kind of took a, she was a part of this the same as them. And that like if women, or at least women who date gamer guys, loser gamer guys, let's be fair, loser gamer guys were realized that they deserved better, or that they didn't have to settle, then this kind of problem would never even result in the first place. And that's true for everyone, not just women. I mean, men, women, you don't have to settle. You never have to think that I can't get a person who I deserve based on my own merits. I better play it safe.
Yeah, and that's to speak to someone's character. Like, you deserve someone who's not going to treat you badly, who's not going to take advantage of you, who's not going to ignore you while you're, you know, right there in the room. I remember there's a, because I keep, like every few years I make reference to this. There's a book called Everything Bad is Good for You. And they tell the story of a guy who's playing an MMO, I assume it's, at the time it was EverQuest, who kept making promises to his girlfriend, like, yeah, we're going to go out. And the truncated version of this story is that eventually he actually locked himself in his room. And when his girlfriend came a knocking, she was like, are we going to go out? Like, are you okay in there? And he just yells back through the door, don't you understand? I'm getting stronger. And, you know, like there is miles and miles and miles of, you know, studies that are being conducted about gaming escapism and how gaming can become an addiction and how it really is becoming kind of a disease in certain cases. Like, there was just a story that came out about the two parents who pretty much let their baby die of starvation because they would go out to a gaming cafe and play an MMO where they were raising a baby, which all by itself, that's just like, you know, like we talk about gaming as an addiction in this country, but if there's anywhere where gaming is a fucking addiction, it's Korea.
Oh yeah, the guy who died in an internet cafe by playing StarCraft 2.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, like if gaming is a detrimental addiction, a disease, something that needs to be, you know, treated by antidepressants, where if you need escapism to the point where you fucking abandon the entirety of your life, yeah, like fucking Korea is it. So, like, that is ground fucking zero for the study of gaming as a disease. But you absolutely deserve someone in your life that can balance the things that they want to do, the things that they have to do to improve their lives, and the people that they want in their lives, which, you know, should be you, especially if they're the one that said, you know, like, will you be my girlfriend or will you be my boyfriend? You know, like, if they're the one that initiated the courting, then goddamn, you know, why is it 6 months down the line you're sitting on the couch with a frumpy face and he's just sitting there fucking playing Halo? And that's not to say that I'm just to qualify, like, I'm not completely innocent, because I've had friends over and I'm working because, you know, my workstation is here at home. And generally speaking, I just kind of want some company, someone to kind of bounce ideas off of and talk to. And I'll, you know, there have been times that I've just kind of shut down and hours will go by and I'm sitting there working and they're watching Netflix or playing on Xbox Live or what the fuck ever. And that's not exactly the best way to go about things, but I also do make it a point, especially these days, to kind of get up from my chair, sit down with my friend or my girlfriend, and just have conversation for a couple of hours and just kind of, you know, force my, because I'm a workaholic, so I can keep working well into the ass crack of dawn, but I realize that I need to kind of step away and engage. If not for my own sanity, then for the sanity of whoever else is in the room.
Relationships, especially when it comes to people that are not known for being entirely socially graceful, is always this balancing act between, like, well, everyone says that I deserve someone, but nobody wants to give it to me. Well, when we say deserve, that's on the predication that you have done something to deserve the work that you've done over the years. I mean, like, no one gets a significant other just by, you know, sitting on their ass and playing Halo 2 all day.
Yeah, and I mean, miles and miles of conversation about that. But generally speaking, it's like, one, you're not the hero of your fucking story. Your life is just happening as it happens. Two, just because you do good things does not mean that the world owes you something. Reciprocity is not guaranteed. You know, like, I see people stranded on the road all the time. My neighbor was just trying to jack up her minivan, and I came out with my racing jack and my jack stand, and I jacked it up, put it on the jack stand. She said that she'd give it back to me tomorrow and that she would need me to jack the car back up because my racing jack lifts higher than her scissor jack. And I said, yeah, that's fine. I didn't expect her to hand me $20 and be like, thanks for letting me borrow your jack stand, thanks for using your professional jack for me. It's like, no, like, I did a nice thing just to do a nice thing. And I don't want to start a conversation about the entitlement of the nice guy, like, because quite honestly, I don't give a shit. If you, like, because here's my argument about the entitlement of the nice guy. If you're a nice guy, if you are a quote unquote nice guy, and you think the world owes you something, you're not a fucking nice guy. Because Superman doesn't ask for a 20 when he holds up a building. All right.
Superman does not expect any tail after he rescues a woman.
Yeah. Simple as that. And if you really want to be the hero of your own story, fucking go out, do good things for total fucking strangers, and then walk away with them going, I never did get his name.
But I love him.
You know.
I mean, that's really the nice guy. Or at least, I think the nice, if you're being nice and expecting some kind of reciprocation of being nice, that's less about being a nice guy and just almost like an economic trade, like a favor for a favor.
Like the amount of money I have turned down helping strangers stuck on the highway, I could make a living just doing that.
You could be like an urban superhero, just traveling the highways and byways, looking for people broken down on the side of the road. Never fear, citizen. I have a jack.
Yeah, like seriously, you know what I get out of it? I get the ability of being a story in that person's life. Well, they're stuck in the middle of nowhere on I-95, and then just this black guy clad in all black came with a big red Firebird, like fucking Knight Rider, and helped me. And then I offered him a 50, and he just drove away.
And he didn't even have a mask or anything.
Yeah. You know, like, I get to be a story in that person's life for the rest of their lives, and they may only ever tell that story for the first week. But fuck it. I don't care. That's kind of a cool thing, you know, that what I get out of helping people is that I'm affecting their lives. And I'm affecting their lives in a positive way. You know, I pushed a car out of a roadway, like not a highway, but like a highway that goes to a residential area. And this woman and her three kids were stuck on the side of the road, and I pushed them to the shoulder, and someone actually stopped behind us and helped me push. And then we shook hands, and then that guy drove away, and I made sure that they were okay, and then I drove away. Jay Leno on Top Gear at one point had said, Americans want to be vocal about the charity they do anonymously.
Essentially, I mean, like, as much as I don't like Jay Leno as a night show host, I do, but I really, really love that quote of his. And that story he told on Top Gear, actually. That was a great story.
And, you know, like, and it's true. You know, like so many people are just running around doing good things, and then they go back and they just, like, fucking tell people. Like, they just, like, compulsively tell people. It's like, let me tell you what I just fucking did. What did you do today? You know, and, like, I tell, you know, I don't tell a bunch of people, like occasionally I'll put it on Twitter just because, you know, like, I'm filled with a good feeling. And I just kind of want to put out there into the world, like, you know what, it doesn't have to be me. It could have been anybody else, but that person got helped by a random stranger. And when they were in a really bad situation, you know, the world was a little less shitty. And when I was getting my car inspected a few days ago, there was this kid, black kid, Mohawk, on a very neon bicycle with a flat tire. And he rolled up to the inspection station, complete stranger. Or no, his tire wasn't flat. It's that his handlebars were loose. And he rolled up to one of the inspection techs, and he just said, excuse me, mister, could you fix my handlebars? And this guy just whips out a fucking ratchet and tightens his handlebars up for him. Like, straightens him out, tightens him up, sends him on his way, doesn't charge him a fucking thing. And I got to witness that. I got to witness the world not being shitty for a minute. And that's what I try and put into the world. That's what I encourage everyone to put into the world. You know, like you see somebody stuck on the side of the road, you know, make sure it's safe. But if you have the know-how, if you have the tools, and it doesn't have to be someone stuck on the side of the road, just somebody, you know, who's stuck in general, in life. And if you have the ability to help them, help them. You know, make the world a little less shitty for a minute. Because even, like, whether you have an audience of a million, or even if it's just you and that homeless person or that person stuck on the side of the road, you're affecting that person, and you're making the world less crappy for a minute. And that's cool. You know, that's how you be the hero of your own fucking story. It's not about, you know, it's not about greatness on a grandiose scale. I'm always going to come back to Kevin Smith telling his daughter, not everyone can be great. Somebody has to make the fries. But you know what? A fry cook can fucking save somebody from a fire.
Before this podcast turns into a 2-hour long epic, I think it's about time we get to our second story. And that is the still confusing, but nonetheless tragic story of a female cosplayer whose name has been withheld because she is a minor, who was found during San Diego Comic-Con, pretty much bloodied and unconscious, but I believe it was outside of a hotel near a fence, and her family had posted the story on Facebook asking if anybody had seen her, if anybody had saw someone near her or like stalking her or something like that. And of course the story went viral, and then a police report came out saying that no, she wasn't assaulted in any way. It looks like she fell from the fence, and that's how she sustained her injuries. But then her mom chimed in saying like the injuries she has doesn't match up with their story, and nobody knows what is going on in this story. And by the looks of how things are going, we may never know. But everyone jumped on the fact. Everyone jumped
that
on the fact.
That it was a girl, a cosplayer, at Comic-Con.
A minor, too. Let's not,
and
she was 17 years old.
Like, and immediately it became the horror story. And that's not to say that other horror stories didn't come out of Comic-Con, because they do. They come out of every fucking con. And there should be no complacency in that. I, like, my personal stance, my public stance, is that there should not be any complacency in these horror stories. Like, well, you know, like, bad things happen at all cons to women, and that's just the way the cons are. It's like, no, that's not the way that it should fucking be. And if it gets to the point when cosplayers have to start carrying tasers, you know what? I'm not going to be against it, because that is their right. But because we're marching towards a place where women can't feel safe, where female nerds can't feel safe around male nerds, you know, bringing us all the way around to Louis C.K. saying that the biggest danger to women is men.
Which technically isn't true. That's heart disease. But heart disease is the number one killer of women, okay?
Don't
buy a long
don't
shot.
Be a dick. Don't be a fucking dick.
No, I'll be. If I wanted to be a dick, I'll bring up the fact that 5 years prior to that bit, he was making jokes about raping Hitler.
But, you know, like.
No. He didn't even make jokes about raping Hitler. Well, he did. But he was also making jokes about rape itself. It's like, you should never rape a woman. Unless you want to fuck her and she doesn't want to, then go ahead and rape her. I mean, how else would you do it? You see, it's funny, but it's also, you know, like.
It's dark.
You wouldn't. It's dark, and you wouldn't expect the same comedian to do both bits.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but everybody kind of jumped on the story, like, "Oh, fucking horror stories at Comic-Con, horror stories at all cons, not all women." But and it's just like, okay, look, me personally, I try to stay out of it. I always try and stay out of it. I don't tweet about it. I don't really talk publicly about it, because my thing is that I was raised by women. I treat women as respectfully as I possibly fucking can. You know, like, I'm not prudish. I'm not, you know, shy about sex or the sexual revolution or like any of the, you know, current social concepts or anything like that. It's like, but me personally, it's that I really feel like the easiest and most peaceful way to get through this world sometimes is to just fucking keep your head down and stay the fuck out of it. Because the people who want to argue will argue, and like, and nobody is going to win, because there is no win. Like, win is when an entire year goes by and nothing happens. That's win. And what makes that happen might not necessarily be conversation, but the breeding of better people. And deprogramming and deprogramming an entire generation of nerds is going to be nearly fucking impossible. And that being the case, you know, like, what, all there is nuclear options, you know, like, what, like it's civil conversation right now, but the conversation is getting far less fucking civil, to the point when at conventions, cosplayers, like female cosplayers specifically, are going to be a protected class. And when you have a protected class of people, unfortunately, the problem with classes of people is that they're made up of people, and people can't be trusted. So once it gets to a zero tolerance policy, which it will, there are going to be some malicious, evil people that are going to fuck up some people's lives. in a big, bad way. And I don't necessarily want to see that happen, but that's what we're going to do. You know, it's going to be cry wolf and believe it immediately. And then, you know, like that's going to be it for some photographer that was misunderstood or some situation that was misunderstood. You know, like for every actual bad guy at a con that gets sacked, there's going to be, you know, 5 misunderstandings, 10 misunderstandings. Like, it's just going to get really fucking terrible to the point where people aren't going to want to go to cons anymore. Like, it's, and, you know, there's still the value of cons in terms of, like, you get to, you know, be around like-minded people, you know, in the same way that there's a social aspect of gaming that I've talked about previously, how you want to be around the people who are like-minded, because it's nice to kind of be surrounded on all sides by people that you know you can talk to about the things that you like and love and you know, are passionate about. But this whole fucking problem with the way that cons are devolving into really just like this Mad Max territory.
And we get into the more difficult situation when you're talking about cosplayers who are cosplaying their favorite female characters. And it just so happens that majority of female characters are dressed pretty scantily clad. And, you know, that traditional argument of like, well, if she didn't want it, why is she dressed that way? It's like, well, that's how the character dresses. It's not up to her what she looks like.
And you know what? When we finally get to female cosplayers as a protected class, if you're a female cosplayer listening to this, here's what I suggest you do. If you get harassed and you're a protected class at that point and you can do no wrong, kick the dude in the balls and say, if he didn't want to get kicked in the balls, why wasn't he wearing a cup?
Then again, I've never been a fan of that excuse. I mean, like, by that logic, I should be able to go walking down to Compton with a blue rag hanging out of my left shoulder, after my left pocket. What? Like, I don't do that because I know what the clothing means. I mean, it's the exact, I mean, yeah, it's, you're trying to comparing somewhat apples to oranges, but the idea is still the same. Cloth means something. We don't live in a vacuum. We know what a blue handkerchief off the left pocket means in certain areas. And you don't want to be thought of that way, so you don't dress that certain way. And for the most part, women don't dress that way. But all of a sudden, when the female geeks want to dress like their favorite characters that, let's be honest, dress kind of slutty, all of a sudden, that piece of wisdom has to go out the window.
And it's not even it's supposed to be that you're in a safe environment. You know, it's not like you're walking around in public. Well, most of them are not walking around in public right up until the point when they got to go get lunch. But, you know, for the most part, it's supposed to be that it's a safe place and it's supposed to be a place where everybody can have fun and attend panels and get autographs and go to the dealer's room and go to concerts and have fun. And it's getting really unsafe. And I'm wondering, like, it's a system that, you know, like the convention system is very aware and they're scrambling to come up with solutions. But solutions eventually are going to fall through and it's going to turn into a zero tolerance policy. I know that there are already cons that will absolutely fucking grab you, take your badge and eject you. And there are other cons that have a strike rule and they'll start marking your badge and eventually they'll take your badge and eject you. And I'm not going to question whether or not any of those ejections are going to be valid, because if it had to get that far, then fine. But also, validity is kind of caused by the frequency of these instances happening, you know, to the point when they are getting emails and forum posts and tweets and Facebook messages, when they're being bombarded on all sides by, like, if you have boobs and you're a cosplayer, you're just not fucking safe. And with this story, like, but the problem is that with the ecosystem that the way it is right now is that with the story, you know, like everybody sees that on both sides of the argument, and it just becomes this hailstorm of fucking incendiary noise, and nothing gets accomplished. You know, like we, because like you said, we still don't know what the actual story is. We may never really know what the actual story is, and quite honestly, turning this into an example situation or a martyr situation or what the fuck ever is just going to really ruin this poor kid's life. because already, you know, her, like, the pictures of what she looks like are floating around Facebook, and she's not going to be safe on the internet another day in her life, at least for the next 10 years.
Not to mention that photographer that was allegedly arrested in this altercation. We don't know what his role in all of this was.
I want everybody to have civil conversation, but I know that everybody's really, really heated and passionate on both sides of the argument, because, like, I'll be the first person to tell you that right now this is the single worst moment in history to have a dick, period.
Because it's been pretty good so far, let's be honest.
Like, it's been pretty good so far, but you know what? The fucking train is out of steam. And we are having to trudge through a really bad area of being a man. Like, it is, like to be a man is to be a villain at this point. Like, you are distrusted, you are evil, you can't be nice because you have an ulterior motive. And and obviously this isn't like a sweeping judgment of how all women feel about men. Absolutely not. It's on an individualist basis. But the larger conversation that's happening here is that every single man has their boot to the throat of every single woman in one way or another, and they need to start stabbing us in the Achilles tendon right now.
Somebody's been watching The Raid 2.
I haven't. I still haven't seen it.
Go ahead. It's on DVD, all right? It's a great movie. It's a great movie, yeah. But continue on about your very, very grim outlook on maledom right now.
It sucks to be a man, you know, like you can't be, you know, like husky anymore. You can't be hairy anymore. You can't do manly things anymore. You have to and that's not to say that, you know, that men don't need to evolve. Like, socially, men always need to evolve because, you know, like, we're ruled by hormones and then the reptilian brain and the mammalian brain and the need to fucking propagate and all this other and all the other fucking terrible machinations that make men do horrible fucking things. And like, and as you know, as a race, we need to fucking evolve. But still, it is the worst fucking time to be a man, where, you know, somebody could be talking to a perfectly rational woman, you know, directly in front of you, and but know that there's a distinct possibility that you're being judged for everything that you fucking say. And that's based on the greater sphere of men. And this isn't something that just happened. This has been for kind of years and years now, where I've experienced people kind of looking at me sideways, like, so you just do selfless things because, yeah. It's like, what do you want? Nothing. I can't just be nice. No. You're after something. You're a Mad Dog Killer.
God damn it, Spoon. You had such a beautiful point to bring up, and then all of a sudden, quack, right in the face. I think you did it before, you asshole. You made that exact same joke.
What?
For all transparency, we tried to record a Nuts and Bolts earlier this week, but there was sound fucked up, and it wasn't released so far. So he just reused that exact same joke that he made in Nuts and Bolts.
Why not? Why not? They'll never hear the original setup.
Oh, but, man, we're going green here at BendTheSage.com. Recycling jokes.
Yeah. But, you know, like me personally, like, I fucking hate people. I'm clinically misanthropic, and I really hate people. But I just kind of want everybody to get along. You know, like I want nice guys to be nice and not want something in return. I want women to trust that they're okay around, you know, halfway decent men. I want everybody to be able to go to cons, have a good time, come home with the occasional, like, holy shit, let me tell you what happened when we got drunk story. But, you know, none of this fucking snuff film shit. You know, how hard is it for everybody to just go to a con, hang out with your friends, maybe make a new friend, like a new friend or two, and then just come the fuck home? Maybe if so many people didn't go to cons because they want to fuck, this shit wouldn't happen so often.
Nah, probably wouldn't.
I've seen people who literally, they go to cons not because they love anime all that much, not because they love gaming all that much, but because there's hot chicks there. there was a guy, I remember, I was at a con in Connecticut years ago, and he was dressed as Edward. Fucking Vampire Edward.
Oh, Vampire Edward.
So, okay. And he had no shirt on, and he was covered in glitter. And as soon as he opened his mouth, I knew he was a bro. And I just kind of went, you are in the wrong part of town, son. Like, I couldn't even believe it, but I could believe it because so many people go to cons just to fuck. They want to fuck, or they want to get fucked, or they want to find somebody who they can just bed, because, I mean, it's the most convenient situation in the world. You're not at home in your mom's basement, so you don't have to worry about who hears you.
God, this is... You know what? I lead a charmed life in that respect. I mean, when I was doing my presentation over in over at Fanime Con, I hear like some random woman scream out on the screen, "I love you!" And like, what other gamer guy, what nerd guy gets that kind of attention? So I don't really, like, I don't think I have much of a ground to stand on as far as like the average nerd guy is concerned, because if you're a guy who isn't very lucky with women, then all of a sudden you hear that. What is your first response? I'll tell you what my first response was. Stop what I'm doing. Look at where I think that voice is coming from. And just do a Fonzie smile. And a thumbs up.
And if I were there, I would have punched you.
How else was I supposed to respond to that?
You just do what fucking celebrities do. You go like, "I love you too." And then you fucking move the fuck on.
I did it as a joke. Come on.
I know. Come on. But still, yeah, like the thing is that, you know, like, so many people are going to cons to fuck, and so everybody is fucking walking with the dick out. And it's not made any better by women just cosplaying as their favorite character. You know, that chick from Gurren Lagann, or fucking Morrigan, or Felicia, or whatever, like, however much spirit gum it takes to legally not be considered naked. And it's just fucking thermite and ice.
Somebody's gonna get hurt one way or another.
So here's my call. Go to a con because you love anime. Go to a con to see your friends. Go to a con because you love video games. Go to a con because you like being around like-minded people.
Go to a con to see somebody perform or see one of your favorite internet personalities put on a show.
Do not go to a con to fuck. All right? In fact, if you are a man, because really this is just towards the dudes, when you wake up, go in the bathroom if you have a really awkward fucking room situation. Whip out your phone, go to Pornhub, and rub one out. And then in the middle of the day, go back to your room, whip out your phone, go to Pornhub, and rub one out. And then at night, before you go to the fucking rave, especially, go to your room, go in the bathroom, whip out your phone, go to Pornhub, and rub one out. Because at that point, because after that, you're lethargic, and you don't want it anymore.
And even if you could get it, you wouldn't want it because your dick's been rubbed raw.
Yeah. So that's it. That is the engineer's plan for everybody to have a safe and happy con. Go to cons because you love anime and video games and like-minded people, and you want to see people perform, and you want to meet your favorite internet personality or your favorite voice actor, get an autograph, go to the fucking dealer's room, go back to your hotel room 3 times a day, rub one out, and everybody will be fine.
You heard it here, folks. And if it doesn't work, you know who to blame. You can find the engineer's personal address underneath this video. Here is his usual time of the day where he goes out to the mailbox, and here's a list of fears.
I think it's a simple plan. I think it's a simple-ass plan.
It's a well-intentioned, simple-ass plan that could go backfire so heavily
Well, look, the worst things that could happen, I foresee, is that, like, one of your roommates comes back and they just open the door and you didn't lock it.
No. With your luck, like, you get some angry-ass email from some female nurse, like, listen, I was trying to score some dudes and everyone was just wanked out. You fucking asshole!
Yeah, like all the dudes at this con were lethargic and tired and nobody was hitting on me.
Fuck you, Mark!
They started noticing that my costume wasn't made very well.
And I had to rely on my personality and lack of humor. Fuck you, Mark!
Oh. I think that that's going to make for safer cons, for a safer con series in 2015. That next year, three wanks a day.
You want me to send in your form for the Nobel Peace Prize, Mark?
Go ahead. I could use $1 million right about now.
All right. I think we are approaching endgame, Mark, and you know what time that means. It's time for you to bring us on home.
Intro by George Sakalis, outro by Zero Reynolds. Their information is below, so give them a click and a listen. You can now take Super Toolshed wherever you go. Just go to bendthesage.com/supertoolshed. For Ben the Sage, I'm Mark the Engineer. Until next we beat, the shed is shut.